Well, I was lucky enough to have great science teachers who inspired me. And I can only think that many other people weren't so fortunate, because talk about science bored some people witless. And I've never understood this. Making science accessible, though, comes down to good communication. And there are two things that ABC science broadcaster Bernie Hobbs is passionate about. Bernie's an award-winning science writer and was a judge on the new Inventors program. Bernie, good morning and welcome.
Hi, Jo. How are you? Thanks.
Now, why is it that science and communication just seem to be poles apart?
Oh, well, I guess if you think of people who are drawn to science traditionally, a lot of it is that you want to get your head around how things really work. And so there's a lot of stuff going on, going deeper and deeper in your own mind, and not necessarily a need to explain that to other people. And when you are explaining it to other people, you're going through the peer review process. So you're writing a very, you know, serious paper for people who already know the same kind of stuff that you do. So there's no real training in trying to help normal people like us understand science. So I think it's gotten better over the years as we've, you know, had people like Dr. Carl come out and totally break the mould with some very bad shirts and 80s coloured jeans. But, you know, that's really helped take scientists out of this white-haired, crazy, white male idiom and just helped us see, you know, that the wonder of our world is something we all grow up with. You know, every kid is like can sit and look at an ant on a blade of grass for ages, and you know they don't have to be on the spectrum to do that. Like it's normal kid behavior to be really curious about your world, and it kind of gets lost when you just have to learn lists and facts and rules and things in school. So that's where, you know, having a great teacher who can really make the natural world and your own curiosity about it something that helps you surge through those hormonal fueled years.
Yeah. Now, once upon a time, it may not have mattered so much that scientists could only communicate with other scientists, but it strikes me that it's never been more important, because people are more engaged.
Yeah.
They want to know, and there are big issues being decided on the basis of science daily, it seems.
Well, you'd think they were being decided on the basis of science, but science, you know, it is just one thing, and science might tell us how the world works and what will be the implications of doing this or that, but it's only one part of society. So science has to realise that, yes, this is what the science is saying, but they have to work within a community, within a society, and you can't just say because the science is right, we have to do things this way. So science has had to kind of take a bit of a, you know, a bit of a lesson there. But as a community, we have to try and get our heads around what it really means, or, you know, obviously the greenhouse stuff and you know, climate change. And people think very simplistic about this stuff, and I think partly that's because science has been taught as facts and lists and stuff, and people think there's very much a right and wrong, a black and white world of science, and it's not that at all. Science is about, can that really be right, and testing it and seeing if it is right or wrong. And when you hear things like, there was some research came out the other day, you would think something as simple as climate change warming the oceans, you would think a warmer bit of water would have the same effect on different species of fish in the water. But there's a classic study in Australia where the mosquito fish, that is like the cane toad of our waterways, introduced to try and keep mozzie populations down, absolutely tore through, tears fins off other fish and ruins the biodiversity in an area. It's eaten by the Australian bass, but the bass is going to do worse in warm water and the mosquito fish is going to do better in warm water. So even something as simple as a bit of a rise in water temperature, you know, is complicated. So on the one hand, science has to keep working at its very anal way of looking at things and seeing what's right and what's not. And the rest of us, if we can just try and remember there's no black and white and there are these questions and things are really complicated, and just get a sense that we live in a system and everything in that system affects everything else in that system, just like in every other aspect of life.
Where did your love of science start?
Year 11, actually. I also found it really boring. I had really ordinary teachers in year 8, 9 and 10. And I just remember in year 8 drawing this diagram of a fungus, like a mushroom, and having to label all the parts and going, yeah, I can really see myself doing this for a living. But in year 11, I had a chemistry teacher who was explaining the way electrons go around an atom. And, you know, we were kind of brought up thinking that electrons around an atom were a bit like planets around the sun. And he was just going, it's nothing like that at all. Electrons aren't a single thing moving around. They're everywhere at once. And it's only when they touch something that they become in a single position. And he said it's like a ceiling fan. You see this blur where the blades are running and you don't know where any of the blades are, but if you stick your finger in there, you will certainly find out very quickly that there is a blade there. And that vision of what electron clouds were like just totally changed my understanding of science and just made me really want to be able to create those visions in my head. So that's where it all started.
What do you enjoy most? Is it the ability to communicate with people
and translate? Yeah, because I'm rubbish in the lab.
See the light bulb go on?
Yeah, totally. I mean, for me, no, it's actually much more selfish than that. It really is me understanding stuff and being able to get that picture in my head. So I think a lot of us, I think the trouble is so many things are taught in such an abstract way, like something like an electric field is always drawn with lines and arrows and stuff, and you know those lines aren't really there. Like, what does it all mean? And it's only when you can get a really clear image of it in your head and then you explain that image to people, that's when you help people understand what's going on. So yeah, so it's all about me understanding it and then telling other people. So not about doing any actual science, because I'm quite bad at it.
18 minutes to 11 on ABC North Coast. I'm with Bernie Hobbs, and she is a science broadcaster for the ABC's Radio National and TV as well, and was a former judge with the New Inventors program here on ABC North Coast. We are talking science. For the past, two or three decades, maybe even more, lobbyists have successfully sown the seeds of doubt about science and in the minds of the public. Does that distress you to see and to see how defenceless in some ways scientists are?
Well, so there's two things there. And one is, you know, you can ask a scientist, can you say that for sure? And the answer is always no. We can't say that for sure, because there is no... The science is not about certainties. It's about the best theory that you've got and testing and testing. And you could be 99... Like the Higgs boson, you know, 99.99997% sure. But that's not certain, you know. So we can never say something unless we can, you know... we know that gravity, the effect of gravity and how fast things move and that sort of thing. But the theories behind it, you can never say, no, that's absolutely certain. And so using that as a kind of political tack to... Because you can't trick a scientist into saying, yes, it's certain, because they won't, because they know, you know, that's not science. But what we need to remember is, as scientists, we need to remember that to follow every... No, I can't say it for certain, because there is, you know, to find some way of explaining that science doesn't work like that. It's not about certainties, but it's as certain as the sun rising tomorrow morning or something like that. Put it in terms that we can all relate to. And, yeah, it's... I think there's a bit of a turnaround now in, you know, we've just recently had the skeptic who went in to disprove climate change. The physicist in California last week came out and he's like, oh, actually, no, it's spot on, they're 100% right. But, you know, I think politics, and this is what it is, politics and marketing, you know, they're going to find ways forever, so to diss one side or another, and you just, there just comes a point where you just have to go, we've done what we can here, and let them play that out, because nothing you can say will change it.
Well, the second part of the suggestion that I made was that scientists have been defenceless in the face of it to date, and that they in some ways they've seemed very much like they haven't known how to handle that dismissal of theories, or that sense that they should be coming up with certainties.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing, because science hasn't been about communicating with lay people, with regular people, and it has to be, you know, that's who funds science. So scientists have had to learn very quickly how to do that. We've got some brilliant scientists who are very good at doing it. We've got the Tim Flannerys, the Ian Lowes, people who are really great at getting out there, the Peter Doherty's, saying it as it is. But it's just that thing, you need to have that... maybe we should send a handbook to every great scientist and say, this is what you should say when you do it, do what the spin doctors do for the other side as well. Just to get people around this idea of saying, no, we can't be certain, like to finish the sentence and say, because no one can be certain. But, you know, we don't live in a world of certainties. So I'm really not sure how we can completely get around that, but... it's just nice to see the sceptics, you know, falling by the wayside one by one. One day Bob Carter, I think, will agree that, in fact, climate change is real and happening, and, you know, the $1,800 a month he accepted from the Heartland Foundation that was enough to buy his opinion is not enough to keep buying it forever. So I think things like that will happen over the next 10 years.
Bernie Hobbs, great to meet you. Lovely of you to appear on our program here at the Writers' Festival on ABC North Coast. Thank you very much for your time.
Very welcome. We're going to go and hear from the Bad Mums now, which is a highlight of the program for me.